Welcome back into the Student Section Podcast. It's all college football all the time. Hope you guys enjoy the episode today.
What's up, guys, and welcome back to the Student Section Podcast. This is Steven. I'm here today once again with Garen.
What's up, guys? This is episode 3. We got a lot of interesting stuff to go over today. So to kick it off, getting right into it, we'll talk about the Kelly Bryant drama going on with him not getting a ring at Clemson. You know, who was in the right, who was in the wrong, stuff like that. Does he deserve a ring, or is he even allowed to get a ring by the NCAA? So what do you think about that?
Well, I mean, Dabo had a quick and sweet comment about it. He said he wasn't on the team. You've got to be on the team to get a ring. I love Kelly and appreciate what he did for us, but he decided to move on. And, you know, I agree with that. He wasn't on the team. He played in, what, 3 games, 4 games, and then he was gone. It was his choice to transfer. You know, he wasn't kicked off the team. He wasn't told to leave. So, you know, I respect Dabo's decision on that. You know, I mean, a lot of people say he quit on the team. I wouldn't put it that harsh, because I think he was, you know, doing what was in his best interest. You know, he didn't want to lose a year as a backup, so he transferred, which is, you know, totally fine. But in doing that, I think you also do forfeit that right to get that championship ring with Clemson.
Yeah, I certainly don't think he quit on the team or anything like that, because, you know, if I put myself in Kelly Bryant's shoes, I would certainly want the opportunity to be able to redshirt and play, have another year to play. And he took that opportunity by going to Missouri. So I know Kelly Bryant wasn't upset by not getting a ring, because he said a ring's just a ring. And obviously, I'm sure he would rather be playing at Missouri this year than having a ring and, you know, maybe in the NFL. But he gets another year to prove himself and the best conference in football in the SEC. So a lot of different scouts can see what he can do. So, you know, a lot of these college football analysts and stuff have been saying that Dabo Swinney should at least sent him a ring out of respect and stuff like that. But like Dabo said, you got to be on the team to deserve a ring. And he was on the team. He lost his job, and then Dabo gave him the opportunity to redshirt and go somewhere else. So, you know, I think Dabo made the right choice.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's pretty – I think it's garbage when people say that, you know, the team quit on Kelly Bryant and Dabo quit on Kelly Bryant. They get upset about that they replaced him with Trevor Lawrence. And I just – I mean, you clearly look what happened once Trevor Lawrence started. I mean, they won a national championship. They completely smacked Bama. You know, Trevor Lawrence is once-in-a-generation talent, or it appears he's going to be. So, I mean – we didn't see the practices, but, you know, Dabo Swinney made his choice, and it was clear that Trevor Lawrence was going to be the guy. And then the thing that Dabo doesn't get enough credit for is he told Kelly Bryant this before he had already played in too many games that it would forfeit his redshirt. He let him transfer before he forfeited his redshirt, so then he could leave and redshirt and get that extra year. So, you know, he could have just not tell him that he wasn't going to be the starter, and then he would have played in too many games, and then he wouldn't have been able to redshirt. So then he probably would have stayed, and that would have been to Dabo's, you know, advantage. Yeah. But he didn't do that.
What would have happened if he would have waited one more game to make the decision, and then Kelly Bryant would have been like, oh, well, now I can't do anything.
Yeah.
I just got to ride the bench, and I don't have any – this is my last year here. I think, you know, many – you can look at it many different ways, and it's kind of – there's a lot of, like – hypocrite like type of comments out there, because at the end of the day, Dabo has to do a job, and that's be the best coach he can possibly be and do what he thinks is best for the team. And he did that, and it definitely showed, making Trevor Lawrence a starter. I mean, we see what he did and all the starts that he had, and in the college football championship game, you know, he went off against a great defense in Alabama. And he really, you know, kind of showed some of Alabama's flaws in that game. And that's why Clemson has a lot of hype going into this season as well. So I don't like how some analysts are saying that, oh, Dabo should give Kelly Bryant a ring, when what would happen if he left Kelly Bryant in there, and then let's say they only win 10 games, and then Dabo's getting criticized for not giving Trevor Lawrence. Maybe the headlines are, you know, what could Trevor Lawrence have done if he was given the opportunity to start? So, I mean, if you think about it that way, I think it's kind of dumb, because at the end of the day, Dabo's got to be a coach, and he did that. He made the best decision for his team while also helping Kelly Bryant out as well. So I think it's kind of dumb to criticize him for not sending him a ring, so to speak.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. Yeah, I mean, if Kelly Bryant had been a starter, I don't see them winning the national championship.
No, I mean, the year previous, he went to the starter, and the Alabama defense swallowed him up pretty good. He was running for his life, getting hit a lot, and couldn't make the throws to keep the defense on their heels. And I think that's what Trevor Lawrence did. He could make all the throws on the field.
Right. Yeah. And so if Kelly Bryant was a starter,
I still think Kelly Bryant's a very good player, though.
Oh yeah, I mean he's a great athlete. Probably an above-average quarterback.
I think just Trevor Lawrence is once-in-a-generation talent.
I mean, Trevor Lawrence is – we've talked about it on our Instagram account that he's a next Peyton Manning.
It's like carbon copy of Peyton Manning. Yeah, like the same crazy. Exact game.
Yeah. So, but I think that's a very good point. I think if Kelly Bryant was a starter, I don't think we'd even be having this conversation, because they wouldn't have gotten a ring. So,
that's a good point.
But – and then another thing I've seen people say about it is that they're comparing it to, like, the NBA specifically and other pro sports, that when these players leave a team, they only play, like, half the year or something like that, they still get a ring from their previous team that won the championship. And I think that's once again, another flawed point, because in the NBA, these guys – if they left a team, most likely it's because they got traded or cut or something like that. It wasn't because that they willingly transferred. Dabo Swinney, Kelly Bryant willingly transferred to Missouri. It was his choice to leave. And I don't think he quit on the team, but he willingly chose to leave to go somewhere else. And these guys in the NBA aren't doing that. Most likely they're getting traded.
Yeah, you can't. You really can't do that in professional sports, especially in like the thick of the season.
Yeah.
Like in the middle of the season. Yeah. Unless you're a free agent, but that requires you to be cut, just like you said. So, yeah, just like you said, like, yeah, it's just – you can't compare that to pro sports. There's so many differences that doesn't really work out.
Yeah. So, I guess our stances on it is that I don't think Dabo quit on Kelly Bryant. I don't think Kelly Bryant quit on the team. I don't think either of those are accurate. But I do think Dabo did what was best for his team, and I think Kelly Bryant did what was best for him to go and leave and go to Missouri. And I don't think he deserves a ring, and I don't think Kelly Bryant's upset about it. So
yeah, I don't think I think it was the best decision possible when you lay out all the scenarios, is to let Kelly Bryant know, hey, Trevor Lawrence is going to be the starter, and four games in, I'm going to let you have the opportunity to redshirt and then go to another school where you can play and not, play out the season, and then having a worse chance of winning a ring, and then his eligibility is wasted or waiting, let's say, six games into the season, said, okay, now Trevor Lawrence is a starter and you're riding the bench and you can't play anywhere else.
Yeah, exactly. And so, yeah, I mean, that's my stance on it. A lot of people probably disagree with that, but that's what it is.
Yeah.
So getting into our next topic, we got Tate Martell not getting the starting spot, not getting the starting job as quarterback at Miami. Did not see that coming. That's pretty big news the other day.
So. I didn't see it this – I saw it, maybe coming eventually. I did not see it coming this quick, which kind of surprised me, because coming this quick, I guess there's only a week left until they play now, so they did have to make a decision shortly. But I figured maybe they'd go with at least cut it down to two people and maybe do a 2-QB system. I know a lot of coaches don't like that, at least for the first game. But, making this decision this quick, I feel like that kind of shows, how Jaren Williams was far and away the best quarterback. And we haven't even seen him play. I mean, he redshirted last year. So that tells you really all you need to know about Martell's performance, which, if he's losing to this redshirt freshman, Martell he's coming in as one of the top quarterbacks in the nation 2 years ago, then, well, he'll be a redshirt sophomore. So I guess he came in the same year as Jake Fromm. So technically three recruiting classes. But, we actually hinted about this in our last podcast episode that he was kind of falling behind in the race, but I did not expect it coming, you know, this fast at least.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't see it coming. I would have thought they would have cut it down probably to two people and then announced the starter. But yeah, I would have thought it would have come down to Martell and Perry. And then I would have seen Perry probably getting the nod just because of his experience last year. But yeah, I didn't see Williams getting it. And then all of a sudden they announced him the starter over Perry and Martell. So that, I mean, that's pretty big news. But I saw this one video. I'm not exactly sure who the player was, and I should have brought it up before this. I'm just now remembering it. But some Miami player, there was a video of him like in a little like conference or media day or something, and they were asking him about Williams, and he was saying, it's like, yeah, he was just an animal. He was a beast during practice. He was making all these throws and these plays, and he was super impressed. He had good things to say about him. So, you know, that's one thing to probably keep in mind about just football in general. Kind of going also back to that Kelly Bryant, Trevor Lawrence thing, is we don't see what's happening in practice. These guys are going out there every day in practice, and they're, you know, they're playing in front of their coaches, in front of their teammates against some of the, you know, the best players in the nation. And we only get to see them in the games. And so when these coaches make these decisions like that, we're always, you know, first to criticize it, but we don't realize what's going on in practice. And it appears Williams easily won that job. You know, he apparently was, you know, showing up Tate Martell and Perry. And I think it would be the same thing for talking about Kelly Bryant and Trevor Lawrence. I think Trevor Lawrence was probably clearly better in practice. So,
yeah, I mean, if the players are saying that Jaren Williams has been doing good in practice, then there's no reason to criticize it like some have. I know a lot of Miami fans were expecting had really high expectations for Tate Martell, like taking them to a 10-win season and all this stuff, which I never thought would happen. Not because Tate Martell wasn't good, just because I didn't think their team was there that fast. You know, I certainly don't think, to be honest, I certainly don't think the battle is over. But now that reports have come out that Tate Martell is contemplating a move to the wide receiver position, I think it may be over for him if he ultimately decides to move to the wide receiver position. I don't know. Maybe if it was myself, maybe I would have given it a little bit more time to see what Jaren Williams does and see if you could at least get some reps in some games. But that's just me. But, you know, if he feels like wide receiver is the best thing for him, then, you know, that's up to him and the coaching staff.
Yeah, yeah. Those reports came out. It's kind of – no, I saw something right when he lost the job that some analysts and guys were saying he should move to wide receiver.
Yeah, I saw that.
And then it came back that he was actually thinking that. And I was kind of taken back for a second. I didn't think that would happen, but he is thinking of doing that. And yeah, if he does do that, I think, yeah, that obviously the quarterback battle is completely over for him. And I would say going into the season, if they're having troubles with Williams, then Perry will obviously be the next guy if Tate Martell chooses to go to a wide receiver position. But, and I'm not really sure about him doing that. I don't know if he'd be the best. I mean, I guess the hopes would be that he'd be like kind of like a Julian Edelman kind of player or something like that.
Yeah, I think, you know, the only thing that I think would work for him, he's only 5'11", so I don't know about lining him up on the outside. I think maybe in the slot could work really well for him. He's not he's really quick and fast for a quarterback. I think he runs like anywhere from a 4.6 to a 4.7. Which is pretty fast for a quarterback. I mean, he was a dual threat quarterback in high school. So, but for a receiver in the slot, that's not terribly like that's not bad. But I mean, in a slot receiver is supposed to be a guy who can basically just slant routes over the middle, not really deep routes like that. So, you know, maybe I can't really judge. I don't know how good he is as a receiver, but his speed might be lacking a little bit at the receiver position.
Yeah, he definitely lacks in size, which, yeah, then he'd probably be a slot receiver. I think he does lack in speed as well. But, yeah, I mean, I haven't seen him play receiver. You know, probably the biggest thing would obviously be his hands. Can he catch a ball? But, I mean, if he has good hands and he can get into spots where he's open, you know, pick apart secondaries, I mean, he can always be a decent receiver.
Yeah, you can always work on your speed too.
Yeah.
But so, I mean, 4.46 for 40-yard dash isn't terrible for a receiver, but most receivers are going to be way faster than that. Yeah. Especially, you know, you see a lot of receivers in college running at least, or that translate to the NFL, at least speed receivers running 4.5, 4.4, and then you see some crazy receivers that run anywhere from like low 4.3, stuff like that. So if he can catch a ball, I think it'll be fine, but it's going to be tough to translate to a receiver this late in fall camp and start to pick up on things. I know he obviously already has the offense down, but he's got to learn a lot of stuff that, you know, watching film on different receivers, breaking down different cornerbacks, stuff like that. So, you know, I can't really judge him because I've never seen him play, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, it is getting really close to the season for him to make a switch. And if he does make the switch,
I mean, reportedly he hasn't decided yet. So, yeah.
So I mean, the clock's ticking.
I guess this upcoming week we'll find out because they'll have practice. So we'll see if he actually does or not.
Right. And the thing about that is if he does switch to receiver, now he's got to compete with the receivers that, like, the regular wide receivers. So,
yeah, I mean, he's already going to start. He's going to have to work his way up, which is going to take a little bit. So,
yeah. So I don't know. You know, it still goes back to we don't really know. Like, we haven't seen him play, so we can't make, like, a full judgment call on it. But it is an interesting thing. But also, if he wanted to go play somewhere else, he would have to transfer, like now.
Yeah, if he wanted to – you're talking about, like, for quarterback?
Yeah, for quarterback.
Yeah, if he were to transfer again to play quarterback somewhere else, I think it would definitely be at a, like, definitely not a Power 5 school.
Yeah, smaller college, yeah.
Maybe FAU, something like that. I think that may be a good fit for him. But, yeah, he would need to – I think it would be smart for him to definitely transfer now. That way he could go ahead and sit out this year, assuming he doesn't get a waiver. I'm sure he wouldn't. That way he could sit out this year and then play next year. But looks like he's going to transfer to receiver.
Yeah. So, Tate Martell, who knows, maybe wide receiver. We'll see in the coming couple days. Now we got Pac-12, this upcoming Pac-12 race that we think is going to happen in this season. For us, it comes down to three teams. Only these three teams really have a shot at winning the Pac-12, and it's Washington, Oregon, and Utah. Washington and Oregon are in the North Division. Utah's in the South Division. We predicted Washington to go 10-2, losing to Stanford and Oregon, and we predicted Oregon to go 11-1, only losing to Stanford, and having the tiebreaker as they beat Washington head-to-head. And then we see Utah winning the South pretty handily, them also going 11-1. Their only loss coming to Washington. Their schedule's super easy. So, you know, you might think 11-1, that's really good, obviously. But if you look at their schedule, it's super easy. So we see them, you know, only having that one loss to Washington, which means Oregon and Utah will face each other in the Pac-12 if we are correct with our predictions. And then whoever wins that will be a 12-1 team coming out of the Pac-12. So that's, you know, that's will be interesting coming to the college football playoff if that happens.
Yeah, I think this is probably my favorite storyline, like, that people aren't talking about the most in college football is definitely the Pac-12 race. I think it's just going to be three teams, basically, it comes down to, like you said, Oregon, Washington, and Utah. Oregon coming off a 9-4 season, Washington went 10-4 last year, and then Utah went 9-5. They had a 9-5 campaign last year. A really good defense Utah had, and Washington had a good defense. We saw a defensive showdown in the Pac-12 championship last year. I think Washington actually has the ability to upgrade their offense with Jacob Eason coming in. I know Jake Browning was great. He was great, especially 2 years ago. But last year, I don't think he was. I think he kind of regressed just slightly. Yeah. And then Oregon, we know what they have. They have a high flying offense with Justin Herbert. I expect a huge year out of him in that offense. So as far as our predictions, we predicted Oregon to come out on top in the North Division, Utah to run away with it in the South Division. But in the North Division, either way, wouldn't surprise me, Oregon or Washington. I think it'll come down to that matchup when Oregon takes on Washington. And it wouldn't surprise me, you know, whoever wins that. But we picked Oregon, so that would mean Oregon, Utah would play in the Pac-12 championship.
Yeah. So,
and like you said, we're saying earlier about one of them possibly getting in the playoff.
Right. Yeah. Whoever wins that game, they're both 11-1 according to our prediction going into the championship. And so then whoever wins that will be 12-1. And for me, if Oregon's 12-1 out of the Pac-12, I would say, yeah, they're like 99% sure they're in the playoff. If Utah comes out 12-1, I don't know about. I mean, they still obviously have an incredible shot, but
their schedule
does not help them because it's incredibly easy.
What we've seen in past years with teams who, you know, don't play the best competition is they sometimes, as the season goes on, they start to take hits from the committee, and stuff like that, and the committee's been getting criticized for that. But so I could definitely see their schedule being a hindrance for them getting in, because it's really easy, especially even with their South Division opponents. They're not gonna they might not even play a ranked team.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at them, you know, the other teams in the South Division are Arizona State, Arizona, USC, UCLA, Colorado, and
only one of them went to a bowl game last year.
Yeah, it was Arizona State.
So, you know, I expect USC to improve. I expect UCLA to improve. I don't know if UCLA will make a bowl game, but
yeah. So, I mean, they
and Arizona State, they named a new quarterback. So, I mean,
yeah, I don't know about Arizona State.
That's a really weak schedule, especially in conference. I don't think they'll have a signature win. They do play Washington during the regular season, but in our prediction, we predicted for them to drop that game. So, not having a signature win, unless they beat Washington, could really hurt their college football playoff chances.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, Oregon, I think if they come out 12-1, they'll most likely get in. Utah coming out 12-1, obviously beating Oregon in that Pac-12 championship will obviously help them. But I think it comes down to what other ranked teams did, you know, because I could see like a 2-loss Georgia or someone getting in above a 1-loss Utah, just simply based on Utah's schedule. You know, I mean, Washington, they play Washington. We said they're going to lose. And then, yeah, the only other team I could see, you know, being like a decent win is USC.
Yeah, even that. It depends what kind of year USC has. If USC has another year like last year, then that's not going to help them at all. But I think 12-1 with a win in the Pac-12 championship. If they lose to Washington and then win the Pac-12 championship game against Oregon or Washington, then I could see them getting in. But I think they should really for sure get in. You need to run the table completely.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they'll obviously have a great shot of getting in at 12-1. But like I said, I could see other teams getting in above – other one-loss teams could easily get in above them. And I could see even 2-loss teams getting in above them. But I guess we'll see. That's interesting.
I mean, we've seen how it's kind of a difficult to compare these two. But we've seen how the past few years UCF – having an easy schedule has hurt them, and some 2-loss teams as the year went on, as the committee did their rankings, we saw 2-loss teams slide above them in the rankings.
Yeah.
So we know how the committee's, you know, going to work. So I think 1-loss, and that loss needs to be Washington, or else I don't see them having a chance. 1-loss, and they need to win the Pac-12 championship.
Yeah. I mean, unless like a USC ends up being pretty good, a Colorado surprises us.
Arizona State being good, maybe.
Yeah, if some of these teams end up being like top 25 teams and they actually have like some solid wins, then I would say 12-1 Utah, yeah, they're almost guaranteed to get in. But it's just the problem is that these teams like you said, last year, the South Division, other than Utah, only had one other bowl game, bowl team, which was Arizona State. So, you know, we'll see what happens. It's interesting. But in terms of the Pac-12 in general, we think it comes down to Washington, Utah, and Oregon. And I guess Stanford would be like fourth, but I see them regressing a little bit from last year as well.
Yeah. I think I'm really high on Washington and Oregon. Mainly Oregon. I think Justin Herbert's going to have another good year. But I think Jacob Eason is really going to surprise some folks. I think that he could actually be a sleeper for the Heisman. It all depends on what kind of year they have. But I think people forget how good he was his freshman year at Georgia, and he was only a freshman. And you have to think he was playing in the SEC, and now he's going to be playing in the Pac-12, which is not the SEC. So his stats are going to be probably much better as far as yards and touchdowns simply. So I think expect Jacob Eason to have a huge year. Chris Peterson is a really good coach at Washington. And then we'll see what Mario Cristobal can do in his second year at Oregon. Mainly those two teams, Oregon and Washington. We predicted Oregon to come out on top to win the Pac-12. I don't really think Utah could. I think Oregon and Washington are probably a little bit more talented than them, even though Utah beat Washington last year, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, after this year, when Justin Herbert is gone, he's a senior, right?
Yeah.
He's a senior.
He was thinking about entering last year, and then he came back.
Right, you're right. Once Justin Herbert's gone to the NFL after this year, I say Washington pretty easily wins the Pac-12 North next year. With Jacob Eason having a year under his belt at Washington, I don't think there's going to be anyone contesting Washington for the North Division after this year. But we'll see how it goes. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back with the Student Section Podcast. Welcome back into the Student Section Podcast. Up next, we got Auburn. We're going to talk about Auburn's season. I'm going to get a little bit in depth. We got some hate for predicting them to go 7-5. A lot of people were not happy about that. They think they'll be improved. They think they'll be better than that. We don't think so. On the other hand, we think they'll go 7-5. We could see Gus Malzahn getting fired. So,
yeah. Look, it's definitely 7-5. I think, you know, the majority of people aren't gonna agree with us on that. I just think that, and I see Oregon as more of a talented team to start off the year. And I think a loss early on could really set them down the wrong path. Especially, I don't think that game will get ugly by any means, but I just think Oregon's more of a talented team. And I think that after Oregon, they have two cupcake games in Tulane and Kent State, but then you got to travel to Texas A&M and play at Kyle Field, which I think will also be a loss there. We see him going 7-5. I know a lot of people in our comment section were giving us some heat. Some Auburn fans, of course. But they don't even have a quarterback right now. We still don't know who their quarterback's going to be. You know, we have a pretty good idea about their defense. They're going to have a relentless pass rush. Derek Brown, he'll still be there. Definitely a first-round draft pick for sure this upcoming draft. But still some uncertainty with their quarterback position. I think they have two really talented options in Gatewood and Bo Nix, but we still don't know. So, you know, and Gus Malzahn will be calling plays this year, but we see them going 7-5.
Yeah, I mean, as you said, the defense should be really, really good, just like last year, potentially even better. But, I mean, obviously last year the issue was their offense, you know, that a lot of times it was there and a lot of times it wasn't. And so I think it'll be kind of similar, especially now that Jared Stidham's gone. I know he didn't fit the offense that well. You know, he was more of a you know, NFL type quarterback, pocket kind of passer. And that's
not what Gus Malzahn.
Yeah, that's not that doesn't fit Gus Malzahn's offense. But and so while I think Bo Nix or any of the other guys might fit it better, they're still young and inexperienced. You know,
I mean, even if they fit it, you know, fit more than Jared Stidham did, they're probably not going to give you as much production as Jared Stidham did, because I mean, Jared Stidham's a better player than last year than that they're probably going to be this year, unless you know they like blow up or something.
Yeah, yeah. See, I think they'll fit better in the offense. In a couple years, they could definitely be good. Next year, I think they'll be better than this year. I think the offense will be better. But I think this year, I just think with that inexperience at quarterback, it's going to really hurt them. So I think a lot of the hate came from us saying that Auburn would lose to Arkansas. And, I mean, obviously I understand that, you know, people are going to disagree with that. But the way we see it is it's college football. And so, you know, things happen, upsets happen. We try to, you know, predict upsets. You know, if we never predicted upsets, then, you know, the top five teams are all going to go undefeated unless they play each other, you know. So, you know, it's just hard trying to figure out who's going to beat who. And so, you know, we said they beat Florida, and then we said they lose to Arkansas. So I could definitely see Auburn coming off a huge win against Florida on the road, and then, you know, coming in all hyped up, you know, after that game. But then they just, you know, lay a goose egg against Arkansas because, you know, they're not ready for it. They're like, oh, yeah, we just beat Florida in Gainesville. Now we're playing Arkansas. And then you drop a game. And I think Arkansas will be improved this year. So that's the way I see it. You know, I understand people are going to disagree with that. But like I said, it's college football. Things are going to happen. I think Auburn could easily – I think they'll be an inconsistent team similar to last year, especially with that new quarterback. So
I don't think you know, by us saying that Arkansas will beat – Auburn, that doesn't mean that we think Arkansas is the better team at all. I just think that Auburn may drop a game there, just like kind of compare it to the game that they lost against Tennessee last year. Tennessee came in, I think Auburn was coming off a win too. Yeah, they were, because I think, I'm not sure. But anyways, besides, that doesn't matter. At home, Auburn drops a game to Tennessee, who had a 5-7 season. So a lot like that game, I could see, you know, going, except they'd be going into Arkansas at Arkansas's place and dropping a game. I just think there's too much riding on the offense, and they're gonna be asking a lot from a freshman quarterback, is what I think. I see them, like I stated before, I see them losing to Oregon early on. I really think just from that point on, it kind of their season goes off the tracks.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. You know, the team that's, you know, excited for the year, motivated, and then if you come in and lose that opening game, it's really going to hurt. And then so you play two cupcakes after that, so you're 2-1, and then you play at Texas A&M, which, as you said, is extremely tough. So now you're 2-2, and you're kind of already thinking, you know, we got the rest of the year to play, and we already have two losses. You know, our playoff chances are basically gone, you know. And so that's the way we see it. You know, it wasn't – we don't hate Auburn. It's not like we're just picked, oh, yeah, we want Auburn to be bad this year. We just – you know, you're trying to pick games.
Try to make it interesting.
Yeah, I mean, we want it to be – it's realistic. Like, we see it as being realistic because, you know, things like this happen. You know, teams lose to teams that aren't better than them. Arkansas is obviously going to be worse than Auburn, but it's just simply an upset. So, you know, that's the way we see it.
What I was going to say is, you think about it this way, is nobody thought Old Dominion was going to beat Virginia Tech last year.
Yeah, I mean, if you had predicted that.
I mean, what,
that,
what if we would have predicted that last year?
Yeah.
A month in advance, I'm sure people would have been like, what the heck?
Yeah, they would have said you are crazy. Yeah, like, that's ridiculous.
But so, I feel like Arkansas would definitely have a better chance of beating Auburn than Old Dominion ever would have beating Virginia Tech.
That's what I was going to say. I think Arkansas beating Auburn is much less ridiculous than Old Dominion beating Virginia Tech.
I mean, there's crazy upsets, you know, every other week in college football. So, and especially in the SEC when your body's getting beat up every other week in, week out, you know, you're bound to drop a game, you know, unless you have a ton of depth, like a team like, you know, Alabama, who even then usually, I don't think they've had an undefeated season since 2009. So, you know, it's the SEC, and you're gonna drop some games every once in a while. And I think if they go 7-5, then Gus Malzahn, unless he has some huge wins, I think he could be out.
Well, that's what I was about to ask you. We have them beating Alabama in the Iron Bowl last week, and I think that'll be one Alabama's one hiccup. They'll drop that game. It's at Auburn. I think Alabama will drop that game to Auburn. And so,
Auburn always plays, I mean, out of their mind against Alabama. I mean, it's just the Iron Bowl.
Yeah, it's the Iron Bowl.
Really, the talent doesn't have anything to do with it. What I've seen is, from my time being a college football fan, the Iron Bowl is you can't, like, just any, no matter what year it is, any team can win.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what makes college football so fun. And so, what I was going to ask you is, do you see Gus Malzahn, after they're 7-5, beating Alabama, do you see him getting fired?
Oh, man, that's tough. I want to lean towards yes, just because they're going 7-5. But Alabama's their last game, and you're coming off of, if we predicted Alabama to be undefeated through that point, so Alabama's more than likely either going to be the number one team in the country or the number two team in the country, more than likely. So if they're coming off a win against a top two for sure, maybe even the number one team in the nation going into their bowl game, then it may be tough. But he also almost got fired having 8 wins last year. So I'd probably say fired, but I don't know.
Okay,
yeah. That's really hard. Yeah. I really can't answer it.
Yeah, I've been thinking about it. It's honestly a tough question. Here's what I'm thinking. If he survives, if it goes as we predicted, so after the Arkansas game, they would be 4-2, I believe. Or excuse me, they'd be 4-3. 4-3 after the Arkansas game, and you're losing to Arkansas. If he does not get fired there, which I think would be extremely likely.
I should have mentioned that. I think he'd get fired after that game.
If they're 4-3 and lose to Arkansas, I could definitely see him getting fired after that game. If he somehow survives, finishes the year, beats Alabama, then I think it comes down to the bowl game. If he wins the bowl game, they go 8-5 again with a win against Bama, I'd say he survives. If they lose that bowl game and finish 7-6, even with the win against Alabama, I think he's fired.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with that. And we don't really see many coaches nowadays get fired midseason, but a loss to Arkansas, I could definitely see that putting him out the door. I'll agree with that. 7-6, I think he's gone. If he has 8 wins and another dominant bowl game like he did last year, going out with a win, then I think he could survive. And, you know, maybe he could get a little momentum going into next year with either Bo Nix or Gatewood having another at least a year under the belt in his system, you know, and maybe they will improve under him in that aspect. But so I think they'll just play up to their competition for the Alabama game, and then, you know, maybe he gets fired. But it's tough.
Yeah, I think it really comes down to if he gets fired or not after Arkansas, and then if they win that bowl game. But, you know, a lot of people don't agree that's, you know, that's a realistic.
I mean, we could be totally wrong. This, this could, I mean, who knows? Maybe they could win 9 games or 10. You know, I don't see that because just I don't think they have the talent to do it, especially on the offensive side of the ball. But like we saw last year with them, you know, they dropped one game where they were supposed to win, and then they would drop another just because their team wouldn't show up. Because, like, I think it was a motivational, like, thing.
Yeah.
Like, they lost to Mississippi State, and then they dropped another to it would have started with Southern Miss. Yeah. They had a close win against Southern Miss, and they lost to at Mississippi State, and they lost to Tennessee. So they just had a string of some bad games where it looked like they weren't really motivated. But, and then later in the season, they beat Texas A&M. So, you know, this team's kind of inconsistent. We could see, you know, many different things, but, you know, we just see them, you know, 7-5, and if they don't win their bowl game, or maybe even with a bowl game win, he could be out the door.
Yeah.
And Gus Malzahn.
Yeah. I think if they don't win at least 8 games, I remember earlier when one of our earlier 2 episodes, we said if he doesn't win 9 games, I think he's fired. But now that we've predicted their season, I say 8 games. They have a really tough schedule, by the way. You got to play Oregon, Texas A&M, Florida, LSU, Bama, and Georgia. That's insanely hard. So now I'm going to drop it down to 8 wins. If it does not reach 8 wins, Gus Malzahn will probably get fired. But, just looking at the schedule, though, I mean, I see, like, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 guaranteed wins, maybe. Let's see, Tulane, Kent State, Arkansas, except we said they're losing. So then you see, I mean, with that loss to Arkansas, which we think is going to be an upset, it just makes it really tough for you to, you know, to pull out that many wins. So, you know, it's going to be a, you know, we think it's going to be a 7-5 season, potentially 8 wins in the bowl game.
Yeah, I can see where a lot of Auburn fans are coming from that have been giving us some heat, because obviously they think that the problem was probably Jared Stidham not fitting in, and that they're just going to, now they're going to have a system, so to speak, like a system type quarterback that's going to be a more of a product of the system and be perfect in Gus Malzahn's offense, and that he's going to, you know, he's going to feed off of that and put up some crazy stats. But that may happen, but unfortunately, I just don't think it's going to translate to wins.
Yeah. So, I mean, we predict them to go 7-5. I know most people are going to disagree with that.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see what happens in the season.
If you prove us wrong, then, you know.
I mean, we'll gladly say, like, yeah, we were wrong. We totally messed that up if, you know, they win 10 games or whatever. You know, we're not out here thinking we're the, you know, the best experts ever, but.
It's college football, like you said. Stuff's going to happen. So it's not like, you know, we're just trying to, you know, go out on a limb kind of and just say, you know, I don't – not even go out on a limb. I just don't think they really have the talent to, you know, put together a 9 or 10 win season. So I think it kind of falls apart for him last year, because I thought he was going to totally fall apart last year and he was going to get fired.
Yeah.
But he kind of – he got a win against Texas A&M and then – had a huge bowl win, so he saved his job. But I think this year, you know, maybe they might have some string of bad losses, and he might, you know, get fired. But we'll see what happens.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Student Section Podcast. Hope you enjoyed it. And as always, tune in next week for another weekly episode.